The House Committee on Transportation is now in session. So welcome, everybody. We're going to take care of a little business first. I'm going to open a work session on introduction of committee bills. And
I'd be glad, Madam Chair, if you'd like me to give a very brief introduction to each of these. Members, you have six legislative concept drafts in your packet. The first five were brought by Lonnie King, who works with, I forget which of the auto dealer associations it is, Oregon Independent something. He works with the auto dealers, so we'll say that. The first five were brought by him. Those include LC 2086, which deals with certification of vehicle salespersons. LC 2087 provides for single trip permits for certain vehicles. LC 2088 allows vehicle dealers from other jurisdictions to sell vehicles at auction in certain circumstances. LC 2089 directs ODOT to develop procedures to expedite titling of vehicles. And LC 2091 directs ODOT to stop processing or cancel registration and registration processing in certain cases. The sixth one, LC 2297, was brought to us by Mr. Barrows on behalf of the Bluebird Bus Company. I believe statute currently limits the length of school buses to, I believe it's 40 feet. Or 42 feet. One of the is anyway. The long story short of it. Sorry for the eloquent delivery, Madam Chair. But the long story short is Bluebird's large bus, which is the most popular of the school buses in the state of Oregon, is now their new design is 3 inches too long for statute. So the LC 2297 would increase the maximum allowable length for school buses to accommodate those.
And with that,
Madam Chair, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 2086, January 9th; 2087, December 18th; 2088, January 8th; 2089, December 16th; 2091, December 18th; and 2297. January 2nd.
Thank you. Representative Gilman moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. And I'll repeat them again, right? LC 2086, January 9th, 2087, December 18th, 2088, January 8th, 2089, December 16th, 2091, December 18th, and 2297, January 2nd. Any discussion? And just a reminder that this is just a routine introduction of committee bills. This does not mean they're going to move. It's up to the person who had these bills drafted to convince us that they need to be debated and passed. So this does not commit you to a vote. And with that, seeing no other discussion, any objections? Seeing none, the bills are introduced. And with that, I'll close the work session. And we'll go ahead and move on to the informational meeting, which is an agency overview. And committee, I wanted to make sure that you all knew the faces of the staff at ODOT and maybe a little bit about what the department does. And we'll probably have more extensive overviews kind of scattered throughout the session. But with that, I'm going to ask Director Matt Garrett to please come up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Matthew Garrett. I am the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And it is a pleasure for me to be here to share some thoughts with you about the Oregon Department of Transportation. What I wish to do is break up the presentation into four parts. I will speak to some of the challenges that we face at ODOT and within the transportation sector. I will speak to some of the governance-type issues and kind of focus on two points. One, some of the structural governance play by, and then some of the documents, the policies, the directions that inform and direct our work. I want to quickly fly over the budget just to show you the sources, the uses of revenues, how the money flows. There's a greater opportunity with Chairman Edwards, and as Co-Chair Edwards, we'll flay open the agency during the Ways and Means presentation where we dig much deeper. But I want you to get a sense of how the money flows in ODOT as well as to some of our partners. And then finally, putting a face with a name, identifying who we are and what we do. I will speak to the various divisions, their roles and responsibilities, and what I've asked, and I beg your indulgence, as I mention a portfolio, I'm going to ask the division administrator to stand up, going exactly where the chair has gone. I want you to put a face with the name and with the responsibilities. So with that, let us begin. You know, the transportation system is a multi-billion dollar asset. And our charge is truly to make sure that we facilitate safe and efficient movement of people as well as goods in and out of the great state of Oregon. Again, it's so much more than just a transportation conversation, and hopefully throughout these presentations you will see that transportation is a hub issue with many, many different spokes. Our system includes freight and passenger rail, public transportation, transit, the ports, the highways and roads, our bridges, our airports, pedestrian walkways, and bicycle paths, among other type facilities. But those are the core charges that we have. There is no question in my mind that a healthy transportation system helps us support jobs, it helps us have a stronger economy, and it certainly provides a greater quality of life for Oregonians. But there are several significant, I would say, major trends that truly are affecting the transportation system, the way we do business. And I'll walk through some of these that kind of play themselves out on pages 3 and 4. The first is the changing economy, almost to state the obvious. We are migrating. We are evolving. And transportation truly is critical to the economy. Our economy is diverse now, whether it's technology-based businesses, service-related industries, forest products, ag products, manufacturing. They all require a range of transportation options. No longer one size fits all. We have to be nimble enough to make sure we are serving these transportation customers. The lack of travel options, road closures, congestions, or bottlenecks certainly impairs our businesses, Oregon firms, and the way they do business. Certainly if travel becomes unreliable, unpredictable, it discourages growth in these opportunities. They choose to move elsewhere. But this is a bottom line issue, moving people and products. Business decisions are made on how healthy the transportation system is. The second issue is that we have an aging infrastructure. If you look at our infrastructure on the highway side, we're getting older. It makes it more difficult to maintain, preserve, and then strategically grow. If you look at some of our bridges, some of our interchanges, they are now ranging between 50 and 80 years old. And with anything, we're starting to feel the creaks and the aches. Tremendous demand on this aging infrastructure challenges more. That's just on the highway side. I can look to the rail system as well. Their infrastructure in some cases is much older. Again, the stressors, the demands on that infrastructure as well. I can speak to some of the challenges in transit, but I think you get the idea. We have an aging infrastructure that needs an investment to make sure that we are delivering the services and covering the wants of the traveling public. Declining state revenue. I'm going to speak about the state revenue picture, so to speak, and the federal revenue picture. Unfortunately, both are declining, and all indicators are there's some challenges ahead of us here. One of the things that bites into the purchasing power is inflation. As we look back to 1993, the last time we saw an increase in the gas tax, and we project out to 2008, we have seen inflation take a 53% bite out of the purchasing power of our monies. In addition to that, we are seeing greater fuel efficiency with our fleets. And while there is significant and positive aspects to this in terms of sustainability or an environmental policy or energy policy, it truly is a double-edged sword because as the fuel efficiencies go up, folks aren't coming to the pump. That's hitting me in an economic sense, and we're seeing revenues decline. And lastly, people are driving less. $4 a gallon was indeed a tipping point. It did change behaviors, and we saw vehicle miles traveled for the first time decline on the auto side. Now, the question before us Is that just a trend, or is this a long-term behavior? We don't know if the behaviors will snap back as the volatile range of gas prices continue to move up and down the scale. So we'll see. That's to be determined. Now, so those affect us on the state front, and our numbers are down. We make certain assumptions as we project out on the way we're going to do business, the projects that we are going to deliver. Those assumptions, again, the world has changed. The unpredictability is the word of the day here, and it's affected some of the financial assumptions we made. So our numbers are in decline. We look to our federal level. While there is great hope with economic stimulus, the realities are just last September, There was, at the federal level, needed an $8 billion transfer from the general fund to the highway trust fund just to be solvent. Some people say that will continue to carry us through the federal fiscal year. Other people are saying $8 billion is not enough. If nothing happens at the federal level in terms of increasing revenue, what we will see compared to the highway accounts now, we will see a 20% decrease in funding programs and projects on the highway side. And then probably a couple years out, we'll see another hit to the transit fund account to the tune of about 40%. So again, actions are taking place on one side with this economic stimulus jolt, so to speak, that will come to the state of Oregon. And this department is certainly preparing to receive whatever comes at us. But that said, if you step back and look at the whole financial picture at the federal level, the indicators are somewhat frightening without movement. The rising cost of materials, again, another inflation, volatile spikes, whether it's concrete, asphalt, steel, or rock. It is compromising our abilities to deliver projects. We're having to downscope projects because of material cost increases. Additional activities on a global scale, whether it's India or China and some of their major investments in infrastructures. We've seen that ripple throughout the market and affect some of the prices and the availabilities of materials. We also have a growing population. That's a good thing. We're bringing new folks into it, different ways of seeing things, doing business. But there is a challenge. Looking out to 2030, we see an increase of roughly 41% in population. And with that will come challenges to an overtaxed transportation system we have now. These people will want to be served. How we serve them is extremely important. The majority of that 41%, roughly 1 to 2 million people, are probably going to land in the I-5 corridor. So, again, our ability to provide the various travel options, the way we invest in transportation, will be challenged. Changing demographics, again, this kind of falls in line with the population conversation, but we have seen over the last six decades that population in the urban areas have increased about 200% as compared to our rural areas, which have increased about 33%. Again, I think that emphasizes that one size of solution doesn't fit all, and that's where we have to be astute enough to tailor our investment packages, our programs, and our policies to make sure we're scratching the itches, whether it's an urban itch or a rural itch. Increasing congestion on key routes. I speak to the freight. Again, as we look to the future, we see freight volumes doubling at least by 2030. The majority of that freight, roughly three-quarters or 75%, will continue to travel by truck. Do we have the highway infrastructure to take on this increased freight tonnage if indeed it's going to travel by truck? Have we invested in a rail system that maybe there could be a modal shift, which has some economic as well as environmental benefit to it? We're struggling right now as we spoke to the aging infrastructure and where we are with regard to investing and maintaining and preserving our system. As I said before, increasing congestion certainly compromises the state's economic competitiveness. It undermines the ability for Oregon firms to grow or even to attract firms. Transportation is always very high on anyone's list when they want to come and land and grow a firm here in the state. So bottom line, there certainly is a cost to congestion. It's a hidden tax, so to speak. It is now impacting the business decisions of Oregon firms and those folks that want to come to the Oregon. That is a bottom line issue, as I said before. There's always a growing concern about the environment. I will tell you, as I look today, I see transportation policy, I see energy policy, and I see environmental policy converging. Not colliding, but converging. And again, we need to stand ready to make sure that all those policies integrate and we continue to move forward. And then two final points on some of the challenges. after 9/11, our world changed in terms of security, safety-type reasons, and certainly a transportation system is critical to the movement of people, goods, and services, and emergency services. So we need to make sure that we are providing the adequate protections to ensure that our system allows the functionality of in case there are these hazards, whether they're man-made or whether they're natural. So we stand ready to respond. Mr. Tindall just last week gave a presentation how Mother Nature bloodied our nose over the last couple weeks of December. We stood ready to respond with the resources we had. Sometimes they're not enough, and I think that was one of the messages that Mr. Tindall shared with the committee. The final thing, one of the things that does keep me up at night, and I don't think we placed it in here, but the recruitment and retention of a qualified and diverse workforce. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to ODOT. It's a challenge across this nation. As I talk to my brethren, how do we continue to attract some of the best and the brightest, whether they're going to be engineers or they're going to be electricians? We need to attract these young folks. And then most important, we need to keep the folks with wisdom within the agency. It's something that's a challenge. I can tell you on many different fronts, and this is a topic that I maybe will have an opportunity to drill down to see how the Oregon Department of Transportation has been much more aggressive in engaging various universities across the nation, engaging community colleges, and engaging technical schools, trying to attract new blood into the organization, trying to grow, again, a qualified and diverse workforce. We are looking internally, and I can share with you, we are looking to our business partners to do the same thing. How do we grow opportunities for the most diverse workforce to do business in building Oregon's economic infrastructure? So, again, I guess the bottom line taken together all these trends, these challenges, they're formidable. And we stand ready to take these on, and I would argue the Oregon Department of Transportation is leading in some of these areas. Let me migrate now from challenges to some of the structural governance-type things that we have in place. ODOT is an agency made up of roughly 4,650 full-time equivalents. We're broken up in the highway portfolio, but it spreads across the state into five regions. There's a map on page 7 that walks through those five regions. I will tell you, ODOT is an organization made up of very dedicated and passionate people, men and women, who deliver our programs, our policies, and our projects. So we stand ready to engage with a dedicated workforce. Now, that said, we look at our mission. Another one of the structural things that kind of dictates how we engage this arena here. You look at our mission, and I think what you'll see very quickly is we serve many masters. And I'm just going to read it to you. We are to provide a safe and efficient transportation system that supports economic opportunity and livable communities for Oregonians. Many charges there. At least transportation, at least land use, at least economic opportunity. And at times, that charge, they're at odds with each other, making it very difficult. So we continue to work with a formidable charge just coming from our mission. Undergirding the way we do business are seven values. The first is safety. That underpins everything we do. It's foundational to everything we do. And again, Mr. Tindall mentioned that last week as we were engaging Mother Nature. The second value we hold is customer focus. And what it says to me, we've got our language, but what it says to me at its core is that we will listen. We will talk with people. We will not talk at people. And we will try to learn and respond to our customers. And our customers are the traveling public, the freight interest, all those folks that use our services, that use our facilities. We will listen, and we will try to take some of our solutions and integrate the visions that come from our customers and see if we can find an appropriate solution. Efficiency, the bottom line is we just try to strive to gain maximum value from our resources. Pretty straightforward. Accountability can be defined in many different ways. The way I see it is that we will be proactive in our engagement. We will be comprehensive in our engagement. We will be transparent in our engagement. The bottom line, we are the taxpayers. We are the stewards of the taxpayer dollar. That's never lost on me or any of my folks who work at the Department of Transportation. The third, problem solving. I try to surround myself with people at ODOT that are solution-oriented in their approach. I want folks to take an issue, exhaust all the avenues. That takes time in certain areas. It's a complicated and big business here. But I want to make sure that when we have something in front of us, that we exhaust the avenues. And whether the answer is yes or no, there's an understanding of the justification and rationale as to how we arrived there. Now, that's my goal. Are we perfect? No, far from it. But I can tell you the intent is there as we try to solve problems. In the world, and another value, environmental, we seek to protect and enhance the environment. Again, the bottom line is we want to make sure our services and our facilities in no way compromise the environment. I think we have a very good story that Doug Tindall will share as he probes down into the Highway Department on some of the efforts we've done along permitting, streamlining, programmatic permits in order for us to deliver projects more efficiently. Not lowering the environmental bar at all, as a matter of fact, approaching it at a different angle, but again, making sure that we are enhancing the environment. And then the final thing, a positive workplace. Bottom line, my folks will engage you in a professional and respectful manner. We honor innovation, initiative, and we honor diversity. Big words, there's no question about it, but this comes from the gut, it comes from the heart, and that's the type of people that work at the Oregon Department of Transportation. Continuing to work on some of the structural elements, I'm going to go to my transportation board, the Oregon Transportation Commission. It is a 5-member volunteer board that's appointed by the governor with the consent of the Oregon Senate, and it oversees ODOT works. It's our policy board for all intents and purposes. The governor considers geographical regions of the state when naming the commissioners. At least one commissioner needs to be or live east of the Cascade Range. No more than three can be of the same political party. The commissioners that we will have during this 2009 legislative session are the following. My chairman is Gail Ackerman from the Portland Metropolitan Region. Michael Nelson is our vice chair. Mr. Nelson is from Baker City, thus the member east of the Cascade Range. Janice Wilson from the Portland area, Alan Brown from the Newport area, and Dave Lohman from Medford. The commission's charge is pretty specific. It develops and maintains the state transportation policy and a comprehensive long-term or long-range plan for a multimodal transportation system. And again, they're looking at the whole chessboard, just not specific to the state's transportation system, but the whole transportation system. I can tell you, and I can say with confidence, that the relationship between my agency and my board is very healthy. It's robust. We invest time in the commission, but more importantly, the commission invests time in my agencies. They know these issues very well. There's an understanding with my chair, a bright line between the policy charge given to them and the day-to-day activities that are given to me. But I can say that I'm blessed to have very quality individuals working to make the Department of Transportation better. In addition to some of the folks that help form the way we do business, I look at partners or stakeholders. Certainly it's critical to make sure that we are as effective as possible in the areas of communication, of coordination, of cooperation. It allows us to move things forward. How we do this is done on many different levels. We use advisory committees and advisory groups to reach out to make sure that the transportation debate is comprehensive. There are some formal groups that we engage, the 6 metropolitan planning organizations across the state, the 9 federally recognized tribes, the 36 counties, the 242 incorporated cities. We have ports we engage in. Those are more formal. We have roughly 160 different stakeholder groups. Whether they come at us in terms of an advisory committee we may put together specific for the freight industry or the transit folks or the rail folks or the bicycle pedestrian folks, we bring them in to inform this discussion. Area commissions on transportation, I'm going to speak to them in a little more detail very shortly here. But again, the clustering of counties who have transportation, a common transportation interest, we bring them together. business and industry. This is an area that over the last several years we've been very aggressive in engaging a partnership, a relationship, building a relationship with business and industry. We bring in the community groups, the neighborhood associations. We do the retail politics. Our projects do affect neighborhoods. We engage them for their input. And then we have our federal regulators, our federal authorities, and our sister agencies. The bottom line is transportation's policies, programs, and projects do indeed receive intense scrutiny from all these type folks. As I said before, our engagement is aggressive, it's transparent, and it's comprehensive. Let me go back to the Area Commissions on Transportation. They were formed back in 1996, so we've had about a dozen years now to watch these organizations bloom and mature. The bottom line, they are regionally, they're authorized to be regionally based transportation advisory committees, and they help engage and expand the opportunities for citizens to have input in the transportation debate. I say with all confidence that this, the creation of the Area Commissions on Transportation, that has been the best decision I have seen coming out of the transportation commissions. There's no question about it. They make a lot of good decisions, but the acts, I think, are the best decision they have made in order for us to advance and better inform the overall transportation discourse. The acts address all aspects of transportation. Again, they're looking at the whole of the transportation system, whether that's surface transportation, marine, air, transportation safety. Their primary focus is indeed the state transportation system. But they do consider those regional and those local transportation issues that will have that effect onto the statewide system. They work through a very in-depth public process. They follow kind of adopted project eligibility criteria, and then they recommend and bring solutions forward to the Oregon Transportation Commission, and then to move projects into our statewide transportation improvement plan, which I'll speak to here in a sec. Another committee, again, that helps vet bring focus to where our policies lead into investment strategies. This is a committee known as the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program Stakeholder Committee. This is a committee that represents the breadth and depth of transportation interests. It was formed back in 2001. It was formed to identify and improve how we could make STIP development. The STIP being kind of the scheduling document. All the projects reside in this. How do we make this document a better document? How do we make sure that there's a clarity to the way we do business? How projects move from concept into this document? How do we make sure that we are engaging on the most broad level of participation? The STIP Stakeholder Committee is the committee that helped arrive at some protocols and disciplines. They have also informed us on eligibility criteria specific to the types of projects. The criteria shows how projects will be selected for some of the major programs, such as modernization-type projects or bridge projects. Now, this session, through the Jobs and Transportation Act, we believe you and your colleagues, stakeholders, and the OTC will have an opportunity to discuss some proposals that may give new direction in the way we make strategic investment decisions, whether it's through just new project criteria that may be layered on to what exists in this document right there, or layered on in some of the funding discussions we've had in the past, or through this new approach, least cost planning that's identified in the Jobs and Transportation Act. There may be, again, a need for new filters, new criteria to help inform what investments and where investments should go. The Oregon Freight Advisory Committee goes back to 1998. I can tell you again, there is a host of freight interest. And what was happening at the department is we were having individual conversations with the various modal aspects. So the rail folks would come in one week, then the aviation folks would come in another week, and the marine folks would come in another week. Then the highway folks would come in and speak about some of the tunnels and the bridges that were encumbering some of the movements of their goods. All healthy conversations, but in silos. We never stood back, again, looking at the whole picture of freight. And back then, I believe this was Director Cronican at the time, said, no, we've got to bring this conversation together. And so we formed the Oregon Freight Advisory Committee. This helps identify the high priorities in freight mobility projects across the state. I believe that they're some of the best and brightest representing this broad section of freight interests, whether it's aviation, rail, ports, trucking interests, or even the private sector folks. OFAC has better informed the discussion. They have been engaged on the OTIAs, the Oregon Transportation Investments Acts that came to us in 2001 and 2003. They vetted the freight portions of those investments, and again, they've even looked at the Connect Oregon projects and put their eyes on what they thought were the best projects that help move freight throughout the state of Oregon. Gives you an idea of some of the folks, the players, the forums that we engage in. I want to transition, staying with governance, but transition to some of the policies, the procedures, the strategies that help direct the Department of Transportation. The first is the Oregon Transportation Plan. Now, this is a plan that is the mother of all policy documents. Back in 2006, our commission adopted this plan. It's the state's long-range multimodal transportation plan, one of the charges given to the Transportation Commission as a whole. It was updated in 08. Our current chair, Chair Ackerman, was then a commissioner, and she spearheaded this effort. Again, breadth and depth of transportation interest around the table, and what now Chair Ackerman tried to do was bring different perspectives, folks with different lenses that would come in and inform this discussion. So it's a unique document. Again, this transportation plan considers all modes and all jurisdictions. It looks at Oregon's transportation system as one system, and it looks out, creates a vision of what this system should look like out to the 2030 time frame. There are seven goals associated with this. I'm not going to go through there, but you'll find them on pages 6 and 7 of your program. Mobility, management, economic vitality, sustainability, safety, security. A lot of the challenges that you saw earlier in my presentation, you'll see embedded in some of those documents. The bottom line, one I want to share with you. Again, this is a forward-looking document. I think it's a vision for the transportation future. It looks at some of the strategies, some of the tactics, some of the investment directions that may play themselves out as we continue this transportation conversation. Now we get to the STIP. Some people refer to this as truly the Bible with regard to transportation, because the statewide transportation improvement program is indeed the funding and scheduling document.
Mr. Garrett.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay.
The process that you just illustrated for us or described for us for prioritizing projects sounds like it's the type of thing we look at to determine how to spend the stimulus package we're hearing about.
Yes.
So not to put you on the spot.
Well, no, it's a good question. So some of the majority of that conversation, we're still awaiting some direction, to be very honest with you. I think how much, how it's allocated, where it's allocated, I think those will be embedded in the federal legislation. So now the question is how much effort can we put in that? Is it going to be a very prescriptive bill that will say this amount of money will go here toward these type of projects? And when I say these types of projects, I think there are going to be some timelines that would suggest that if your project is not ready, i.e. it has cleared the environmental or the right-of-way encumbrances that may take time to develop a project. If your project hasn't done that, you're not going to be able to deliver this program, because they're going to give us 120 days or 90 days. Again, those are numbers that are still somewhat soft. So again, it may be very prescriptive here. Now, that's economic stimulus on the federal level. Where I think your question has application, as we step back and look at the conversation specific to the state funding discussion, I think truly we have some protocols, existing criteria that have been used on investment strategies going back to OTIA and beyond. Might there be more? You bet. I think that's the conversation that we will engage you and your colleagues on.
Follow up, please.
So my question, I guess, is does the in light of our current economic challenging situation, does the list of priorities that you put together carry that, reflect, result in decision that addresses the urgency of our current situation? Because I wonder, in looking at it, if there's not a very, very noticeable time element where we kind of make a bunch of assumptions and say, well, you know, life will go on, money will come in, everything will be great, and thus this prioritization list is acceptable. My question now is, has that changed?
I don't think so. Again, we're certainly making some assumptions because we don't have the final bill. But we do think the underpinnings of this federal economic stimulus will be job creations and stimulating the economy. So there's going to be specific timelines associated with getting projects out. The list that we have developed, roughly 50 projects total, and this, again, this is just specific to the state because our brethren in the counties and the cities are doing very similar things. But what we have assumed is there are going to be strict timelines. And what we're seeing right now in the language is 120 days. You will obligate the monies in 120 days, which means we can get projects on the ground this summer in construction. And that's the type of assumption we've made, and that's the type of discipline that we applied to the project. So, again, of the 50 projects, that $180 million infrastructure investment that we have identified on the state system, I think it truly meets that discipline. These are projects that are not foreign to anyone. They have been vetted by area commissions on transportations at previous times. They have come out of our management systems, which is a disciplined approach that identifies the vulnerabilities on our bridges and in our pavements. We've identified those things. And we know they have cleared any of those right away or environmental encumbrances. They have cleared those things. These are project-ready investments, and we will hit the ground. I think the bottom line is, no one should be surprised. I think they're good investments. The need will, on that front, far outstrips the revenue that will come. I'm very comfortable with what we have. I think we've applied a discipline to really put boots on the ground this summer.
Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't want to be the first one to ask a question. Actually, Matt, it's first of all, you do a great job with what you have. I've traveled all over this country and a good part of this world, and our roads relative to the rest of the world are well maintained, especially in light of what you're working with. I just wanted to thank you for that. And much of this, to be quite frankly, you're just handed to work with, but I think it fits in the context of this conversation. You talk about reducing money from federal government and the gas tax, but you know, one inconvenient truth that's been left out of this is the reduction in timber production in this state over the decades. And I really wish it was in this, because it is a reflection of our needs and our lack of needs and why we're lacking. And I know I beat this drum all the time, but we used to have a lot more money. You go all the way back to the 80s in here. There may be even reference to the 70s. And one of the reasons why your revenues are declining is because of that. And I really think it should be left in there. These things just pop. The decreasing access to aggregate, to gravel in this state. We import gravel into this state. And you know what? For the life of me, I cannot understand that. And at great expense to this state and at great increase to our carbon footprint, when you import gravel from the state of Washington into Clackamas County, it just doesn't make any sense. You talk about some things, the increase in the mandated process and eternal study of things. I said this the other day at a different venue, if you replace a fish-bearing stream with a culvert that is obstructing the passage of fish, you don't need to have a study, environmental impact study, engineering design, and all the process that goes along with that. You do one, you can do 100. And I like to hear you, the gentleman over there, talk about programmatic permitting. I'm very interested in expanding that. And I don't know that much about this, but we have outsourced in this state over the years, and I'm not convinced, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not convinced we've really saved any money. And most of your projects, if not all of them, prevail, which I really like, too. So you're providing a lot of good family wage jobs. So there you go. Not a question, more a comment.
I appreciate that, Madam Chair. I think that more is a comment. But, again, I understand the economic implications that you've laid on the table with each one of those statements. And the bottom line, we are looking very closely at the way we approach and deliver projects, and streamlining across the board is front and center in my portfolio, my highway portfolio's efforts. So I appreciate the comments, and certainly I think you're spot on. I will tell you, this is a parochial document. This is, this is the Oregon Department of Transportation. So some of those things kind of fall outside that. But the economic impact, I do understand and realize that, and there is implication to the way we do business.
So, one more question. Representative Boone, I don't know if anybody else.
First, a comment. Thank you, Mike, for mentioning the gravel issue, because it's still my consensus that 10 years ago was about when it's when we started not being able to take gravel out of the streams and maintain just farm roads, but other uses of it could leave a lot of the flooding in Tillamook County. Editorial comment. The question is, how can we, I just remember back to when my son was in engineering school at Oregon State and looked at several opportunities job-wise in that field, in that sector, and one of the things that stopped him from going to the state, both in forestry and in civil engineering, was the uncertainty of a state job in terms of every other year, every 2 years we're redoing budgets, and his comment was, he said, a lot of my buddies would love to work for the state. They have great, you know, long-term career path with benefits, and wonderful benefits, wonderful placement in your local areas, but they're afraid that they would get laid off, when, you know, just like what we've been doing on and off. So my question, auxiliary to that, is of the stimulus package that would come and your list of projects in that, have you figured out how many of those jobs would be new jobs, or some of them are quite small, just a couple of days worth of work? Those might be people on the bridge crew or whatever doing that work. Has that been weighed out as to how many additional jobs, if you got your whole package, that would bring?
I think, Madam Chair, Representative Boone, I think we have the numbers, but I'll have to get specifics for you because I don't want to put something out that might be wrong. But to your point, the types of projects. I can tell you we're sustaining the jobs. Some of the projects we've had to downscope because of costs. So rather than, you know, the need being paving 8 miles of roadway because of financial implications, we only could get to 4. Well, some of this economic stimulus package will come in and we will fully fund now the 8. So we just continue to move forward on the top types of projects. Some of the other things are deferred maintenance. We have put them back. So in the areas of preservation, operations, of safety, of the culverts. So it's the types of projects we can get. So does it create new jobs? I think it keeps the jobs on the ground so we truly sustain. This is the economic stimulus. I think we do have some numbers we can apply to it. We certainly have significant numbers specific to the statewide conversation. But I'll make sure if we have those numbers, I get the right number to you. Okay. Specific to this economic stimulus package.
Yes.
With the environmental impact studies matter, there are ways that we could help you streamline the process on some of this, because, like, well, everybody knows I have the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, and we spent $11 million, and we're still not even done with an environmental impact study for 12 miles of road. I mean, you say that to the taxpayers, and are they going to ask, are my dollars being used wisely for this? Is there a way that we can streamline this? Because I know we have state agencies suing state agencies over things, and those are things that, I mean, shouldn't be happening. And anything we can do to help you as a board up here to change some of that stuff that's going on.
Well, Chairman Beyer, Representative Widener, the bottom line is, I think, continuing to push this agency to identify those areas where we can streamline, where we can have concurrent conversations rather than sequential conversations that spread things out. In no way does my agency want to lower bars. There are rules of the game, and we'll play by those rules. It's how we approach the bar, again, is I think where we can gain some opportunities. I can tell you this is something that's being looked at the national level, kind of under the umbrella of project delivery. How do we shrink down the time frames to deliver a project? That's where some of the frustration comes into play, whether it's Newburgh-Dundee. It's just the duration of how long it takes to deliver some major modernization. We can deliver preservation projects, bridge projects. We're pretty disciplined. Once we secure the funding for it, we get that done. The modernization-type projects take a little more time because of the financial implications. Now, we'll play by the rules, but we are looking at how we can streamline. We have success coming out of the OTIA 3 program specific to our bridges. The programmatic permitting, where we say a bridge is a bridge. Here's the disciplined approach we are going to engage in. We go to our regulators saying, here's how we're going to do business, and then we do it, and they sign off. That saves us time and money. That OTIA 3 type effort, that programmatic permitting specific to those bridges will now come back and infuse itself into the way we do business at the Department of Transportation across all programs. So I think we continue to learn as an agency, and we do advance this effort. But I think what you and your colleagues can do is continue to ask the questions and say, what if? What about this? I think those are the types of probes that we need. I'm not going to ask you to engage the Endangered Species Act or the Clean Air Act. That's a lost cause as far as I'm concerned. Okay.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Garrett, continuing on the theme of streamlining and efficiency, I'm curious about the tools and the mechanisms that you have at your disposal to ensure that the transportation system that we do have is used efficiently and that perhaps in ways that might relate to funding of the transportation as well.
Chair Beyer, Representative Bailey, I think the best tool I have are the cross pressures by bringing folks from different cuts of cloth around our forums. We spoke to some of the forums that inform the way we do business, whether it's policy or an investment strategy. That is the best way we learn to make sure that we are addressing the needs of all Oregonians, whatever the discipline, whatever the sector. And we've been pretty aggressive to make sure we have those cross pressures at the table. That's the most useful tool I found. And again, I hearken back to the Area Commissions on Transportation. That forum unto itself and the collection of folks that sit around that table, they have better informed the overall transportation discourse, and they have been very disciplined in assuring that the cream of the projects rise to the top, because there is that intense scrutiny given to it. And then there are the cross pressures from the different jurisdictions, the public-private sector, to inform that. That is the number one tool I would lay on the table, and I think it's been extremely successful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since everyone's asking questions, I might as well get mine out of the way right now, too. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to Matt was in my office the other day, and we had a very good conversation about diversity in the transportation workforce. I wanted to just make a comment and say how happy I was, how optimistic I am about ODOT's commitment towards diversity in the workforce, and that with regards to stimulus, that we're going to be stimulating a broad cross-section of our state and its residents. And wanted to just give you an opportunity, because I didn't see it in here, to maybe talk briefly about the efforts that you have made, and honestly, I think are great efforts to diversify our workforce, and just compliment you again for the efforts you've made and continue to make in that regard.
Well, Chair Beyer, Representative Call, I appreciate that. Again, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, there's a little history that we've gone back. We've identified some challenges where we can do better. Our numbers were somewhat anemic in certain areas. But we've been aggressive. We've focused on growing this workforce. We certainly know it's a business decision as we look to the future. And our workforce, our numbers, we need more numbers. We need the folks to help deliver and build the infrastructure. So what we have done, again, I spoke to some of the internal efforts we did with recruitment and retention, that challenge. But as we look at our business partners who help us deliver the projects, what we have done is we've said, listen, we need to grow opportunities for small business. And a little deeper into this in this presentation, in the highway portfolio, we speak to a small business program. One of the things that when I came aboard, I kind of did a listening tour with small business, and I use that as kind of an overarching theme. Small business to me includes a minority-owned business, a woman-owned business, an emerging small business, or a disadvantaged business enterprise. So I just use small business because I know small business, roughly 80% of the businesses in the state of Oregon, they're truly the economic engine of the state's economy. But what we have seen is they were challenged in engaging the heavy highway construction portfolio. Certain barriers, I would say barriers that my agency may have put in place, some other barriers that we continue to work on outside of my agency. But what I told this folks, you tell me if you truly want to do business and you have the capacity to do business with the Oregon Department of Transportation, I will remove barriers. And one of a couple things jumped out at me in the conversations. They were having to compete with the big boys in terms of risk, in terms of their insurance, in terms of their bonding capacity. The risk wasn't commensurate with the size of a contract. and they just weren't able to compete. So what we have done is we've created a program, and we've pulled out projects on the architecture and engineering side, projects below $75,000, and then the commensurate reduction of insurance or risk or bonds. And these folks are now competing against like small firms, not against the big boys. And we've done this, and we've seen success. We are seeing new faces engaging on that front, the design front. We're mirroring that image on the construction side. We just started earlier this year. We actually pulled out smaller contracts, $100,000 and below. Again, attracting new faces to the Department of Transportation, lowering those risks so they can compete against like firms. And we're seeing success there. There's no question on the construction side, we will mirror the successes we're seeing on the technical side. So we're growing that opportunity. So we've identified barriers such as prompt pay. Whether prompt pay is 120 days or 45 days or 30 days, it's too long for small business, some small business. So we're looking at paying twice a month just to make sure that they can stay solvent. We listen to these folks. We've made adjustments. Just the sheer paperwork. If you're new, you're not a big firm. The ability to write a huge document, they didn't have the time. They were either working, and then they'd come home to their kitchen table, and that was their workstation. Then they had to go through the paperwork. We've taken that for small business, and we've reduced it down to an 8-page document. That's very simple. What we've tried to do, remove the barriers that we're denying folks to get to the table. I've been very specific with everyone that I don't give anyone anything. You must earn it. But if I have placed barriers that won't allow folks to even compete, then I will take care of that. I think I have done that. I think they can get to the table, and it's their hard work and their abilities that will allow them to compete. We have tried to level the playing field. We've invested in a disparity study that did show that we had some inequities up in the Portland metro area in terms of African-American community firms and Asian-owned firms. We actually sought a federal waiver from the U.S. Secretary Department of Transportation for us now to react to a lawsuit that denied us from putting hard goals in. Well, we now have a factual and statistical and anecdotal information that says, yeah, you have an unlevel playing ground, at least up in the Portland metro area, at least specific to subcontractors. And we have targeted projects and placed hard goals to correct that inequity. We want to grow opportunities. That's the bottom line. And we are doing everything across this agency, fighting on many different fronts, whether it's on the construction side or the apprentice side, trying to make sure we're investing in training folks who could queue up in a pre-apprentice structure, and then they get to that apprentice and they go off to the joint apprentice training centers to learn their crafts and to move forward. I apologize, it is a long answer to your question, but hopefully what it shows, if this agency understands this, we see it as a business decision, it has rippled through the whole of the agency where I have a standing leadership team on workforce diversity and small business, and we're fighting on many different fronts to grow opportunities is the bottom line. So I apologize for the long answer.
Representative Gilman.
Matt, I've been looking at the federal stimulus package. It looks like about $30 billion for transportation. You mentioned that you'd be ready. I want your assurance that you'll be able to spend Oregon's portion of that in a timely manner so we don't have to give it back.
See that fellow right there? He's assured me we will deliver.
Okay, and one more. Yeah. And there's an interesting little kicker in there. It says we'll have to use U.S. steel on the projects. Are we going to be able to do that?
That's a Madam Chair, Representative Gillen, that's a little kicker that I have not read. If that's in there, obviously we'll have to react. If it's the Buy America type thing, I haven't seen that language. I will tell you the language is fluid, but that's something we'll react to. My hope is that material is ready because we have projects that can use that steel.
Representative Schaffler.
American steel and Oregon gravel. I hope prevailing wage is not considered a barrier to getting emerging minority contractors into these projects, because I don't think that's really in the best health and welfare of this state. We need those workers work real hard out there, and they need to make a living, too. So I hope that's not considered one of the barriers.
Chair Beyer, Representative Schaffler, it never was broached to me as an issue.
Thank you.
So unless I don't see any other.
Comment on that, and I don't know in all contracting areas, but in some contracting areas that is a barrier because it's not sustainable work in all cases, especially for smaller firms, and the pre-work that's required and all the bonding, et cetera, is expensive. And so unless you can guarantee that you would be getting quite a few of those projects, that it might not be something you could bid for.
Okay. So let me go back to the STIP. And again, I hold up this document. You should become familiar for the new folks on the panel. Become familiar with this. Again, this is the funding and the scheduling document for all our major investments in terms of the highway and in terms of transit type projects. It lists all state and federally funded projects that will be undertaken in 4 years. We work very closely with the Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Transit Administration. We seek their approval for those projects to be included in this document. Our commission adopts this every couple years. So we continue to refine and refresh this document. The coordination and developing it. I mentioned all those forms, the Area Commissions on Transportation, our federal agencies, our local governments, our tribal governments, our ports, our transit districts. All that informs the projects that flow into this. There are major categories that are displayed in this. Modernization, those are our big capacity type projects. Pavement preservation, state and local bridges are included in here. Highway safety projects, operations, special programs like bike pedestrian type investments, transportation enhancements. It's a federal program that actually allows you to use money outside the curb, to be very honest with you. And then public transportation or the transit type program, the capital purchases and operations. Again, all those folks help determine it. I mentioned those various management systems that help inform the types of projects that move in here. Our local plans, whether the local government's transportation system plans, our metropolitan planning organization's regional transportation plans, our land use agencies, our refinement plans as we try to bring more detail to projects, transit agencies, they all go into this document to inform the types of projects. So this is something that you will become familiar with, and you will reference this as we reference it quite often. I want to transition to budget. And again, I know this is a policy committee, so please bear with me. I want you to look on pages 10 and 11. This is what we at ODOT term a bubble chart. And if we can just parse this, and I will flow through this very quickly, Madam Chair. On the left side of this bubble chart, you will see the sources of funds, where it comes from. You see the box, you see the revenues, you see the beginning balances. That's just what carries over from the last biennium, projects that, again, are long-term in their delivery. But now you start seeing the revenue flows from the motor fuel tax, that's the gas tax, our weight mile tax, our federal dollars, the licensing and fees. So you total that up. If you look at the whole of the transportation fund, the trust fund account, you'll see roughly 5.4, almost $5.5 billion. And you can see the various coloration of what makes up the state portion, what makes up the federal portion, and then what we have bonded. So again, start off with a big pot. This is the trust fund. And then you go down and you start to see this money flowing. And you can see the money starts to flow. This is specific. You can see this, the colors of the funds going to the counties, going to the cities. This is the allocation split, the 60% that goes to the state, the 24% that goes to the county, and the 16% that goes to the cities. And then we transfer some things to the agencies. After those takedowns, we flow to the right-hand side, or the ODOT budget, $4.3 billion. And you can see the eight portfolios that are represented by the various colors of money and those disciplines. That's the flow. The $2.8 billion in the highway portfolio representing probably 65% of the funds. On the lower left-hand corner of that box, we parse out the highway portfolio and tell you how that $2.8 billion is distributed between the maintenance disciplines, the preservation, the bridge, safety, and so on and so forth. And then we parse out the ending fund balance as we breeze things through. Those things that carry over or those balances equate to that ending fund balance of of $81 million. I share this with you again so you have a better understanding of what makes up our budget, that greater trust fund, how we share with our city and county brethren, our state county, and how it ripples through the various disciplines of ODOT.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Somebody can get back to me on this, but okay. I really like this. It looks like an engineer's bubble chart, and I appreciate it. But my doing of the quick math between $549 billion and $5,459 billion and $4,330 billion, there's about $78 million missing in that bubble chart, and if somebody would tell me where it went at some point, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, we'll do the math for you.
Thank you.
We have a pretty good account.
A million here and a million there, and pretty soon you're talking.
Maybe rounding.
It's a little more than rounding, or my math's off.
Fair enough. We will correct your work, so to speak.
Madam Chair, that wouldn't be your payroll, would it, Matt?
No.
I'm missing
sure.
out of there.
I'm not sure. I think that's all built into the budget. So,
but I do like the chart.
Well, I appreciate that. I will tell you, this is, Madam Chair, Representative Berger, this is not an engineering chart. This is a
discrepancy. It's the ending balance. It's off the chart.
Oh, okay. This is actually comes from a former commission chair who was an attorney who just said, I can't
understand. Well, I wonder,
it's well, now we get it, don't we, Representative Ben? It's perfectly clear.
But it is a simple, it's a bubble chart. It works for me as well. What Mr. Tindall informs me, if you do the math, your 78 may be actually 81, and that's the ending fund balance off the chart. If you look on the far right bottom, that may be the $81 million if you add that into it.
Okay, and we haven't gotten to where that goes. That's ending fund balance.
Again, just carry over, and you can see the box, exactly right, but you can see the box on the lower right-hand side, and it starts to parse out those committed funds, those reserves in the highway fund of $8 million. We have rail transit and safety totaling 12. That's exactly
Thank
right.
You.
Okay.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you.
Widener, I didn't give him another chance.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Follow up.
We have debt service is $407 million. Is that annual or biannual?
This is a biannual document.
Any other questions?
That's it.
Okay. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. And I'm on Representative Edwards' subcommittee, so I'm sure I'll be familiar with this, but I have a request of you. I would like to get the historical receipts of timber going back 50 years or as far back as you can go, because I want to see how much that's reduced, because I can imagine it's a considerable amount of a percentage of our road money. And then in this chart on the revenues, where do timber receipts fall into? Which category or categories are they on there? All other or other transfers to ODOT? Or do you know? And if you don't, just find out for me.
It's not represented here. The timber receipts go specific to the counties.
Okay. Forgive me then. Find out how much that is.
I got you. We'll get that. I'll talk to my county friends. They have all that, I'm sure.
Okay. Don't see any other right now. Go ahead.
Excellent. Going to the fourth and final area, and this is where I'm going to ask. We're going to walk through the various divisions, their responsibilities. I'll do some quick hits, knowing that you will bring some of these good folks back, drill down into much more detail, and at that time, when I speak to a division, I'm going to ask the division manager to stand up again so you put a face with a name. I begin with transportation safety. It's headed by Troy Costales. Troy's got about 27 FTE dedicated folks who work and organize and partner with statewide transportation safety programs across the state here. I can tell you his efforts have helped reduce the Oregon highway fatality rate by 60% since 1980. These things just happen. They happen because of very dedicated people, and as Troy and his folks are national leaders in terms of transportation safety. Again, not wanting to steal anyone's thunder, but again, they conduct campaigns focused on behaviors, including seatbelt use, and I can tell you Oregon is always within the top five, more times than not, in the top three in the nation in terms of seatbelt use. impaired drivers, child safety seats, speeding, and forth. They award grants across the nation, and they have a strong partnership with law enforcement and the courts. Again, the highlights of his portfolio are the fatality rates and the continued decline of fatality rates. He is a leader amongst the nation, and called upon often to share advice with my sister states in terms of transportation safety. Turn our attention to the public transit portfolio headed by Michael Ward. Michael Ward's got 15 folks working with him, works with transportation districts across the state to create travel options for Oregonians. He provides grants to local governments and nonprofit organizations, those providers who make sure that they are delivering transportation services to folks. Provides financial and technical help to the small cities and the rural transit services, and senior and disabled transit. Michael does that type of work. Just to give you a quick hit, just some of the numbers, Oregonians took 113.6 million rides on urban transportation districts and 5.6 million rides in the rural areas. And people with special transportation needs, those senior people, those disabled folks, took 3.6 million rides in vans through volunteer-type trips. Mr. Ward and his folks helped coordinate that effort. Turn attention to the highway portfolio. This is the biggest portfolio represented by my Deputy Director, Doug Tindall. Doug has about 2,636 folk, FTE, maintaining, preserving, and modernizing the state road system, roughly 8,000 center line miles on the state highway system. As you know, he provides emergency repairs, as we've seen just last thing with the storms, the floods, the mudslides, the ice. His efforts and his folks' efforts make sure that we are repairing and we're upgrading the 2,700 owned state bridges, and then our folks are detailed across the state to do inspections on all the bridges in the state of Oregon, roughly 6,700 folks. The highlights, I do not want to steal Mr. Tindall's thunder, but we have the intelligent transportation system, our cameras, our ramp meters, our loops, our road and weather stations, and for all intents and purposes, what we are doing is we're trying to maximize the capacity of the roadways, and we're trying to maximize the information and the empowerment that goes to the traveling public so they can make the decisions to move forward. By the numbers, our maintenance crews laid over almost 94,000 tons of asphalt in 2007, provided about a little over $12 million for pedestrian and bike-related type improvements. Mr. Tindall's portfolio includes the innovative partnerships, so you'll hear about solar highways, innovative approaches on how we are trying to generate electricity to operate the transportation system. I could go on and on. Mr. Tindall's portfolio manages and delivers the OTIA program, and I can tell you that in 2001, 2003, again, those OTIA programs generated nearly $3 billion worth of investments. The window for that delivery is in 2003. For the OTIA 1 and 2 programs, nearly all the projects will be open to traffic at the end of this year. Of the OTIA 3 bridges that were needed to be repaired or replaced, more than two-thirds are either under construction right now or they are complete and open to traffic. And this is why we are only halfway through the program. Mr. Tindall's portfolio is delivering on the investments that came in 2001 and 2003 with the OTIA packages. And I will tell you, Mr. Tindall's local program is managing the oversight of the Connect Oregon projects, and we are delivering on those Connect Oregon both one and two type programs. So with that, Mr. Tindall will be back at you to drill down into his portfolio. Turn my attention to the rail portfolio led by Kelly Taylor, Ms. Taylor, and 24 FTE. Inspect and regulate the trains, the tracks, and the crossings to ensure safety. They are a regulatory agency. The underpinnings of their efforts are safety. They've examined over 14,000 locomotive and rail cars, identifying a little over 3,000 deficits in 2005. They ensure and enforce the laws relating to safety by inspecting these tracks, these hazardous materials that move across the rails. Again, good portfolio. It's a regulator. Blessed to have Kelly Taylor heading up my rail division. Greg Delpani heads the motor carrier transportation division here. 313 good folks register. They monitor the commercial trucks and buses across the state of Oregon and registered 50,000 in-state trucks and 250,000 out-of-state trucks in the 2007 timeframe. They collect the highway use or the weight mile tax, the registration fees. They deal with all the oversized, overweight, and special permit-type commercial vehicles that travel and move product and commerce throughout the state of Oregon. I'd be remiss if I didn't speak to what I think is just an outstanding effort. That's the Green Light Program. It's the Way in Motion. If you've driven the highways, you'll see those arms with those they look like dental X-ray machines coming down. Those are transponders communicating with the trucks and our way stations. And if everything's copacetic, the folks can continue to move down the highway rather than pulling into the way stations. That has significant benefit for the trucking industry in terms of savings of more than almost 125,000 hours, and that equates to something like $14 million if you take the idle time that is reduced from them not moving into the. That's an economic benefit. That's an environmental benefit because they're not spewing emissions into the atmosphere. They do a great job. It's a well-run organization. The Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division, DMV, is run by Tom McClellan. Tom has 888 good folks that provide comprehensive driver and vehicle services throughout the state. They do the drive test. They administer and monitor driver behavior. And for those folks that don't behave real well or choose to violate the law, they engage in sanctions against those folks. In 2007, there were more than 2.9 million licensed drivers in the state of Oregon. He regulates vehicle-related type businesses, including investigation of customer complaints in the automobile industry. We have 64 DMV field offices across the state serving 13,000 customers on a daily basis. I would submit to you that DMV is probably the face of government for most Oregonians, and I can tell you that the professionalism of those folks at the counter, they have changed the vestiges of what DMV used to be in the past. This is a crisp-run organization, and I think if you talk to most people, as I have, a lot of people share their experiences with me in the DMV lines, and I have yet to have one person tell me that they weren't treated with respect in a very businesslike manner, and they were surprised how quickly their transactions took. Some of the things going on may challenge some of our times, but again, we'll engage those discussions later. DMV's serving Oregonians very, very well. Transportation Development Division. Jerry Bohart, 218 FTE. These are our folks that guide and support the short and the long-term planning for Oregonians' transportation system. Healthy engagement with local governments as we look at the transportation system to ensure that we are optimizing the whole of the transportation system. They collect data. They do the analysis. All the maps you see, a lot of that work comes and is produced from the folks over at Transportation Development. They are engaged in a very healthy effort in terms of asset management, looking at our various transportation assets, whether it's guardrail, culverts, or signs, so we have all that information in front of us. Very involved in the research area, the technology transfer, facilitating the communications with the transportation sector as a whole. Innovative creativity work comes creative work comes out of the Transportation Development Division. Excuse me. Finally, Central Services. Lorna Youngs is my other deputy for Central Services. Lorna is actually giving me a break at an Owen sub-steering committee, so Ms. Youngs isn't here. But the good folks of Central Services, 524 of those folk, are for all intents and purposes our administrative arm in the agency. Whether it's financial, whether it's human resource, procurement, purchasing, our fleet, our information services, this is the portfolio that makes sure that the skids are greased, the cogs are oiled, and our agency can move forward. Madam Chair, let me conclude by saying that transportation enables Oregonians to reach their jobs, to reach their recreation, their worship, to access goods and services, and to compete in today's global economy. Simply put, transportation is an integral part of everyone's life here in Oregon. Finding solutions to the many, many transportation challenges is formidable. It requires creative thinking, and most importantly, it creates hard work. And I think those combinations are reflected in ODOT's commitment to providing that safe and efficient transportation system that tries to address the needs of a very diverse community known as the state of Oregon. I submit to you, ODOT is a good investment. Transportation as a whole is a good investment, and it's good for our state economy as well. The future of Oregon's economy, I would say, depends on us maintaining a healthy and maintaining and operating a strategically growing an efficient and healthy transportation system. I leave you with this, that transportation is not an end to itself. It's a means to many ends, those ends being economic development, family wage jobs, livability or quality of life type issues, connecting communities, environmental stewardship, and mobility. Madam Chair, with that, I thank you for this opportunity. And I'm happy to take any more questions that your good folks may have.
Thank you. Are all the questions? Oh, Representative,
I have one. It's not a question. It's a comment, and it's a big thank you. You run a really top-notch agency, and the people in my district who work for ODOT are friends and neighbors and family members, and they truly go beyond the call of duty. And we especially see it during times of storms and floods and things like that. We can't thank you enough for your cooperation. Your people go way over what they're required to do as far as sharing and offering assistance, and I just want you to know how much you're appreciated.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Bruin, I can't tell you, and I know Doug said this, I can't tell you how much that means, and I assure you, we'll make sure that the boots on the ground hear that, because they are the ones that are rolling up their sleeves, getting things done. But I can't tell you how much that's appreciated. A pat on the back goes a long way within my department. I'm blessed with great folks.
Any other comments or questions?
I have a Newberger. Kind of a ridiculous question. What is this?
That's a beautiful bridge, Spencer Creek Bridge, on Highway 101 between Lincoln City Depot Bay and Newport. That's an arch that's going over. Uh-huh. And actually, this is last week, the consulting engineers held their annual award meeting, and the Spencer Creek Bridge and its design won two awards. So ODOT brought some hardware home with our consulting engineers, but that's a beautiful structure.
And it's where is it between?
It's actually between Depot Bay and Newport. Beverly Beach.
Okay.
Spencer Creek Bridge. The interesting thing here, it's gorgeous as you drive over. If you can drive down into the park and look at the bridge itself, you'll get that look of the arch. It's extremely creative design here. Good looking bridge.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Garrett, given that this is a policy committee, as we gear up for the session here and all the various issues we're going to be facing, I'm curious to hear from your perspective, are there policy tools that we ought to be examining that you could use in your department to better manage Oregon's transportation system, or do you have everything that you need?
No. Madam Chair, Representative Bailey. No, we don't have everything we need. We would look forward to engaging those conversations. And I think you'll see some of the questions, some of the efforts that we could use a little help from as our conversation continues over the course of this legislature. So, no. And I'll tell you, we're not perfect. We'll continue to improve. And again, I ask that the committee engage us very aggressively. Challenge us. What you're hearing from your constituents. What's working, what's not. That helps inform our discussion. So off the top, I can't tell you what it is, but as we move forward, and I hope I have a chance for conversations with you personally, more than happy to move things forward, put things on the table and tell you, here's what I'm thinking. If you tell me what you're hearing from your constituents, we are an agency the bottom line, we reserve the right to be smarter tomorrow than we are today. And we listen to folks, whether it's compliments or critique, we will listen to folks and we will grow on that. So there are policy tools we need to engage across the board. This is a big, complex business. And we'll be bringing those forth in terms of legislative concepts, different bills that will come before the Chair's Committee, and we will inform you as to where we stand on those positions, one way or the other.
Representative Schaffler?
Yeah, I'd like to see some sidewalks and curbs between 205 and about Southeast 170th on Powell Boulevard, Highway 26. Cuts right through my district. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I am, and I'm a Southeast Portland boy, and I concur with that. We need sidewalks out there.
And Madam Chair, and you are doing a good job with what you have, and I'm grateful too, believe me.
Thank you. And I don't, was there anything else? Not seeing anything. I just want to thank you for coming in and giving the, you know, the quick overview, and all the department heads for coming in, committee. Most of these people you're not going to see in the building very often unless we ask them to come. So I wanted you to know who was out there when you're asking for help on constituent issues or policy issues that you're dealing with, that these are the people that will be answering those questions. And I'm sure that the department would love to have those questions funneled through a person and dispersed out, but I think that they would be very happy, and they're always there to help guide policy decisions and questions. So thank you for coming and spending your time with us today.
Thank you, folks.
And I know that committee Robin Freeman has probably met with most of you, so you know who she is, and so questions that's who you probably want to get to. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the committee, and thank you today, and we'll see you Friday.